Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time character in my own right.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that has no single star, even if we are proud to have a diva in Mary Pat. Mostly, we all support one another the way all good character actors should. Speaking of which, each of us recognizes the value that character actors in movies provide to the respective projects in which they perform. After all, what would John Wayne do in Rio Bravo without Walter Brennan? Yul Brynner and company do in The Magnificent Seven without Eli Wallach? Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window do without Thelma Ritter? Each of those actors supplies the framework that allows the stars to shine so brightly, and the best shine right alongside them. Each of the three of us have our favorites, and over the next several minutes, we're going to share them with you. But before we do that, Nathan, it was your idea to do this show, so why don't you define exactly what a character actor is?
Yeah, the way I would describe the term character actor is that it's someone whose face you definitely recognize, but whose name you probably don't know. Character actors rarely, and in some cases, never lead a movie or a show. They almost always play those supporting roles. They tend to have a really distinct look or something immediately recognizable about them. They're usually cast in similar types of roles throughout their careers. And most of them, when you look them up, have dozens or sometimes hundreds of acting credits to their names. They're truly working actors. So if you've ever seen someone pop up in a movie or show and said, "Hey, it's that guy," or "Oh, that lady," then they're probably a character actor. And there are some people who have started as character actors but became better known and eventually starred in movies. So actors like Morgan Freeman, Willem Dafoe, Steve Buscemi, they all started their careers that way. Paul Giamatti, Walton Goggins, J.K. Simmons, Judy Greer, Jennifer Coolidge, I could keep naming them. But these are also actors who became known for one type of role, small parts, but got more prominent roles after kind of toiling for years and years, even though some of those people still kind of feel like character actors. So hopefully I
cleared
that up.
Gene Hackman was always a lead actor who had the force of a character actor.
Sure. Yeah. And a lot of times the character actors are playing kind of the eccentric scene stealer, mm-hmm. like the person that comes in and does a wacky thing and you know, maybe pushes the plot ahead or just brings a little
right.
character
when
to it.
When we get around to my choices, you'll see that.
Well, I'm going to go first, and I selected a couple of female character actors. And the first person I selected chose her because she and I share a birth date. And she was actually born exactly 50 years before I was born. And she appeared in over 70 films. She has sharp features and her voice is very unique. But she is known primarily for one star turn, even though she's on screen for only 12 minutes. And I'm talking about Margaret Hamilton, who played the Wicked Witch of the West in The Wizard of Oz.
She's only in that for 12 minutes?
Yes.
Wow.
Do you believe that?
I don't.
And she scared the bejesus out of me and my sister, and I'm sure millions of children across the world. 70 films. She was in My Little Chickadee with Mae West and W.C. Fields in the 40s. She was in 13 Ghosts, which was this sort of cult horror film.
William Castle.
Yeah. And then she was in Brewster McCloud.
Robert Altman.
Yes. Yeah. And then she appeared on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood because she loved kids and she did not really want to be associated with, the Wicked Witch of the West. And she was very devoted to children's literacy. She's a little tiny thing, too. She's like not even 5 feet tall. Mm-hmm. I really loved her performance in Wizard of Oz. And I always looked for her in other films. And she did pop up occasionally.
And usually because she was the Wicked Witch of the West, that must have, you know, given a boost to her career.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. But then she kind of got, you know, she was always playing the old maid, the spinster, or, housekeeper, or somebody who was very stern. She was amazing, and she died in 1985.
Yeah. What I want to do is talk about a guy whose name you might recognize because it's a pretty unusual name. His name is Strother Martin. But if you don't recognize that name, you definitely recognize this guy when he was on the screen. He was born in Indiana, and he served in World War II, and he was a championship diver, of all things. And when he moved to L.A., he became a swimming instructor and appeared in, as a swimmer in some movies. And he finally started snaring little roles in a bunch of Westerns, mostly Gunsmoke, Have Gun Will Travel, and The Rebel. But then he even was in a Perry Mason show, and he was on a comic show, Pete and Gladys, with Kara Williams and Harry Morgan. But here, he got attached to, as many character actors do, with a certain director, in this case, John Ford. And so he was in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. He was also in Slapshot. He was also in The True Grit, the original with John Wayne. But here's what we know him for. We know him for actually three movies. The Wild Bunch, where he played a bounty hunter. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, in which he's the guy who hires Butch and Sundance to protect a railroad cash payment. But then there's Cool Hand Luke, in which he plays the warden of who is overseeing Paul Newman and has the classic line, "What we have here is a failure to communicate." That's how we all know Strother Martin.
I think Strother Martin just walked into the room.
Wait a minute. I didn't get to do Margaret Hamilton's famous line. "I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too."
That's right. Or "I'm melting, melting."
I will not be doing any impressions on this show. Okay, well, it's my turn to pick a favorite character actor. And when I was thinking about who to choose, I picked a couple of guys whose work I not only admired, but who passed away recently. So I've been thinking about them a lot. But maybe my favorite character actor, one of the quintessential character actors, M. Emmett Walsh.
Yes.
You might recognize that name because it pops up in credits all the time. But he was a big guy. He had a very distinct voice. He usually played like cops and detectives, and later in his career, lots of crotchety grandpas. And he died in 2024. He was 88 years old. And over his career, he amassed literally hundreds of credits. I think something like over 200 films this guy appeared in. So I looked this up. He debuted on Broadway. That was his first big acting gig, in a play called Does a Tiger Wear a Necktie, which starred Hal Holbrook and featured in a Tony-winning performance Al Pacino. This is what put Al Pacino on the map. And Walsh was there right from the beginning. So in the 60s and 70s, he was in dramas like Midnight Cowboy, Little Big Man, Serpico with Pacino, The Gambler with James Caan. He was in comedies. What's Up, Doc? One of my personal favorites, The Jerk. He was also in Slapshot right there with Strother Martin. And then later on in his career, he was in Blade Runner, Reds, Ordinary People, Silkwood, Fletch, My Best Friend's Wedding, Knives Out. This guy worked all the time. But the movie I wanted to mention is 1984's Blood Simple.
Yes, which the Coen Brothers.
The debut film by the Coen Brothers. And M. Emmett Walsh in this movie plays a private detective. He's hired by Dan Hedaya, who could have been on this show as well, one of the great character actors. Dan Hedaya hires M. Emmett Walsh to catch his wife cheating on him. But M. Emmett Walsh, it turns out, has plans of his own, and things do not go according to Dan Hedaya's plan. And Blood Simple was one of the few instances where M. Emmett Walsh played a major role in a movie, one of the leads. It might have been the only time. And he's weird, and he's quirky, and he's scary in all the ways that Coen Brothers characters became known. In fact, you could argue he's the prototypical Coen Brothers bad guy.
Yep.
And there's a scene near the end of Blood Simple between M. Emmett Walsh and Frances McDormand, where each of them is in a different room of an apartment and thinks the person on the other side of the door is someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moment involving a knife and a hand coming through a window that rivals Hitchcock.
Yeah.
And I just think M. Emmett Walsh in that movie, it ends with his weird braying laugh. And it's one of those moments I will never forget. Blood Simple is one of my all-time favorite movies, one of my favorite Coen Brothers movies. And so much of its impact is because of M. Emmett Walsh. So he's one of my favorites. And anytime I see his name in the credits, if I'm watching an old movie, I clap alone in my living room.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and I think that some character actors aspire to be leading actors, or maybe by choice, chance, or circumstance, they end up there. But someone like Margaret Hamilton, I mean, she did some stage work and so forth, but that was never her goal. I mean, she was happy to play the roles that she played. And I think that if she was able to transform herself in various ways without, we know she had a lot of makeup as the Wicked Witch, but I think that it was her voice and just her persona that made her so recognizable.
And the only thing I would say about Emmett Walsh is that if you think that you know the Coen brothers movies and you have not seen Blood Simple, you need to go back, because that's where they began. Everything they've ever done in movies began with that film, and it is such an amazing, amazing movie. And that ends the first half of this special character actor edition of Movies 101. It's time now to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to continue our discussion. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
SPR News Today is your daily dose of headlines from across the Inland Northwest. The SPR Newsroom and our partners around the region have you covered with stories ranging from politics and local government to housing and Indigenous affairs, all in just 10 minutes a day. Listen now at SpokanePublicRadio.org, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the NPR app.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I listed some of our favorite movie character actors. Who wants to go next?
I will go. So I talked about Emmett Walsh in the first half because he had recently passed away. And my second choice, I arrived at it in the same manner because he actually died earlier this year, just a few months ago at age 74. And his name is Tom Noonan. And this guy was one of those actors where he showed up in something, you said, oh, he's up to something. He was tall. He was thin. He was imposing in this very unusual way. So he often played creeps and murderers. And he started his film career in the early 80s. He had really small parts, but worked with big name directors. So Paul Mazursky in Willie and Phil, John Cassavetes in Gloria, Michael Cimino in Heaven's Gate. And then as his career progressed, he was in all kinds of movies, big and small. So he's in Jim Jarmusch's Mystery Train. He's in RoboCop 2. He's in Last Action Hero. Later on, he was in Synecdoche, New York, and a few other Charlie Kaufman movies. And one of my favorites, The House of the Devil. And he's very scary in The House of the Devil. He was also part of that huge ensemble cast in Heat, the Michael Mann film. But the performance of Tom Noonan's I wanted to highlight is in another Michael Mann film, and that's 1986's Manhunter,
right,
which is an adaptation of the Thomas Harris novel Red Dragon. It's the first Hannibal Lecter film. Mm-hmm. And Noonan plays a character named Francis Dolarhyde, who's better known as the Tooth Fairy. And he is so scary in this movie. He yes. might be the scariest villain in any of the Hannibal Lecter movies. And I include Hannibal Lecter in that.
Is that a stocking?
Yeah, he wears like a nylon on his face.
I just want to say American Film Institute chose Margaret Hamilton as villain number four, villain of all time.
You keep coming back to Margaret Hamilton. And I understand. But we're talking about Tom Noonan now. Let's give the man his flowers. I also wanted to call out a movie that he actually wrote, directed, and starred in. One of my favorite unsung indie movies from 1994. It's called What Happened Was.
With Karen Sillis,
yes,
correct?
Yes. And Noonan based it on a play that he had actually written. It won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance that year. The movie is set entirely in one New York apartment during this awkward first date. Characters played by Noonan and Sillis. And it's really weird. It's really sad. It's funny, sort of. And you cannot look away from this movie. And while I was reading about it, I discovered that a few years ago, while he was still alive, Noonan was trying to pitch a sequel to this film. And he said in an interview in Slate that it would have co-starred Charlie Kaufman and Vin Diesel. And I wonder what that film might have been like. But if you haven't seen What Happened Was, it's again, it's one of those cases of a character actor, longtime second banana, writing himself an amazing lead part.
And Karen Sillis herself was a character actor.
Yes, absolutely. So Tom Noonan, love that guy.
I agree. What Happened Was is chilling.
Yeah.
That was great, great film. Well, the actor that I chose second, I had a lineup of three, but it's Anne Dowd. And she's almost at the point where she's become maybe morphed into more of a leading actor. But
more
not,
of a household name.
Correct. Household name, but not quite. Yeah. So I remember her most recently, Aunt Lydia in The Handmaid's Tale. So we're talking about a series. And also The Testaments. So she's now in The Testaments, which is just starting again. But she was in a variety of films back in the day. And when I name some of them, you'll have to stop to think for a moment to think, what was the part that Anne Dowd played? So she was in Philadelphia. She was in Garden State. She was in Marley and Me. She was in Hereditary, which you probably remember her from that. That's why I'm saying she's sort of a transitional individual between character actor and lead actress. And I should mention, she's been in hundreds of TV shows. So if you think about, you know, Law and Order in particular, like she shows up playing all of these different parts. But I think that if you look at some of her, what she brings to the screen is that she is this character that, you know, does come on, doesn't steal the scene necessarily, but you always remember the part or the focal point of what she plays.
Yeah, because she immediately walks on and I immediately hate her. I think, oh my God, I'm not going to like this character.
Well, that happens sometimes, but that's okay, right? And, you know, and then she does some stuff like she was in Marley and Me with Jennifer Aniston. So, Nathan, I know that you like Anne Dowd.
I love Anne Dowd.
So, riff a little bit on the reasons why.
Well, I think that one of the reasons that she was so effective in Hereditary, which I think is what a lot of people first took notice of her in, is that she has this way of speaking that is like just a little too quiet. She kind of talks sort of slowly, which can be very comforting and also very disconcerting.
Yes.
And that works so beautifully in that movie where she has to be an unassuming cult leader, basically. The first thing I really noticed—
She cared about those girls.
Well, sure. The first thing I really noticed Anne Dowd in was in a 2012 film, super low-budget indie movie called Compliance. Did you ever see this movie?
Yes.
Ooh, that's one I cannot shake. It's based on a true case. I won't go into the specifics because it's horrifying, but she plays a manager at a fast food restaurant who is taking orders over the phone by someone who claims to be with the FBI or the police department. And horrible things happen in this fast food restaurant, and it really happened. And Anne Dowd is so amazing in that movie because, again, we have to believe her as someone who really would be the manager of a fast food restaurant.
And she pulls that off.
And she also plays, you know, sort of like the matriarch of this, you know, mostly younger staff. But we also have to believe that she's capable of some of the things that she does.
Well, right, because we think this in Compliance, we think this is not going to go there, right? This is not going to go where we think it could go.
And then it does. It was a very controversial movie at the time. You know, it'd play at film festivals and people would get into screaming matches during the Q&A. But if you take away anything from that movie, it's Anne Dowd is incredible.
Yeah, I remember Anne Dowd mostly for The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, and she was in The Leftovers production. Too, another show.
Yeah.
She
yeah.
just was this evil presence in The Handmaid's Tale that I thought was perfectly cast. That's just what she does best. In trying to find the second person, because we're all trying to do two, I went through, first of all, Edgar Buchanan, who everyone really remembers as Uncle Joe in the sitcom Petticoat Junction. Here comes Uncle Joe. He's moving kind of slow at the junction.
And then this might predate a lot of people's experience.
Yeah, I don't know that.
That's right. Well, you know, it's only 1963 to 1970. He was in all 222 episodes. But then I thought about Ben Johnson, who was in a lot of John Ford, The Three Godfathers, Shawar, Yellow Ribbon, Rio Grande. But he was also in Sam Peckinpah's movies, Major Dundee, The Wild Bunch, The Getaway, Junior Bonner, but he won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for Peter Bogdanovich's 1971 film, The Last Picture Show. I passed those guys over because I wanted to talk about Warren Oates.
Yeah.
One of your favorites.
Yeah.
I know. Warren Oates was a guy who served in the Marines and then went to University of Louisville and started getting into acting classes. Then he went to New York and he got into the TV series Studio One. But he came out west, and like the rest of these guys, he hooked up with television, and he was in a bunch of westerns, Wagon Train, Rawhide, Wanted Dead or Alive, The Big Valley, and Gunsmoke. And then he was even in a couple of Twilight Zones and The Outer Limits. He began, as did Strother Martin, began a relationship with Sam Peckinpah, and he was in Ride the Country, Major Dundee, and The Wild Bunch. And he was even with Stripes with Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And, you know, Warren Oates was just one of those guys, you don't know the name, but you saw them right away. And you saw this guy, he had a Kentucky kind of a twang, and he could play a good guy or a bad guy. He could be anything that you needed him to be, which is exactly what a character actor should be. You make an impression as to who you are, and you can play any role.
You didn't even mention the Peckinpah movie in which he has the biggest part. He's the lead in 1974's Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia.
I did not mention
that. And that's
yes.
one of those instances yes. of him, you know, getting a lead role. I love Warren Oates. I mean, he is one of the great leathery tough guys yeah. of 1970s movies. I mean, Tulane Blacktop, Badlands. I even like him in some of his 80s movies, like Tough Enough and
How
Blue
about the
Thunder.
Peter Fonda film, The Hired Hand?
Yes.
That's where he plays a really good guy.
And that's a bizarre movie.
It doesn't feel out of character.
Yeah, I think that's a great choice.
You know, I think that all these choices that we've been making here, all these are really great ones. Margaret Hamilton, Margot Martindale, Ann Dowd.
I didn't mention Margot Martindale.
Oh, now we have.
Now
Margot
we have.
Martindale
yeah,
is great.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, along with Edgar Buchanan, who was way before her time.
Emmett Walsh, Tom Noonan. I'm going to get
exactly,
mine out there.
Exactly.
And then I thought somebody like Melissa McCarthy would be a character actor for her entire career. Then she segued into, you know, headlining a film.
At any rate, I think we've made the point that movies depend so much on character actors, I think arguably even more than the stars.
Oh, yeah.
At any rate, that ends this special character actor edition of Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and I'm joined, as always, by Nathan Weinbinder and Mary Pat Truthart. Let's take this moment to thank Aaron Bratt for directing the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late great comic George Burns. Acting is all about honesty. If you can fake that, you've got it made. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.